Very good day to you. It's Howard Coppedge for Salford City Radio. It's your city, your station, 94.4 FM. Now, my guest asked for Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac. So, being the sort of person I am, we've got Carrie Moore playing Need Your Love So Bad. Hiya, Norman. It's Mr. Norman Baker. Hiya.
Baker?
I've done it, you see. Norman Baker, you said
there
it.
There is a famous politician called Norman Baker.
No, you said before somebody said you were Norman Baker. Yeah. I've got Norman Baker in. I've got to say, he's just been inducted into the Blues Artists Hall of Fame. And it's not quite hit you yet, has it?
No, I don't think it will, really. I think it's a strange sensation. As I say, there's only nine of us in Great Britain, you know, and all the others like Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck, I'm the only one I don't recognise, really. It's quite a strange feeling to be in that sort of company.
So right? How does it happen? Do they say, like, oh, you're going to be inducted, like, or...
No, it was a fait accompli. I just got the email to say that... you've been, you know, I hope you're proud that you've been inducted into the Legend Hall of Fame in Memphis, and I thought it was a joke. It reminded me a bit of Mike Harding, who used to tell me when he got a call from Top of the Pops.
So you were looking on the internet, and it wasn't there, was it?
No, I checked it out, and it wasn't there, and I thought, this is Fred from the chip shop or something, you know? anyway, a couple of days later, there it was. It was, yeah, it's a... as most people who know me, I'm not exactly shy, but it made me feel quite humble, I have to say that.
It's wonderful. I'm really proud to be in your presence now. You can see the aura. There's this aura around you.
that's the lack of a
bathroom. Is that what it is? All right, we'll open the windows. Last time you came in, you were telling me that you were going to do a lot of touring. Yeah. It was last year. Mm. Where have you been since I've been chatting with you?
We've been Serbia, Croatia, Hungary, Germany, Spain, Holland, Belgium. I'm running out of play. I can't think of it.
So, can I ask you a question?
Switzerland.
What happens when we leave the EC? Does that cause you a problem, or do you just carry on as normal?
I'm hoping it won't. It is something that's crossed our minds, that it used to be more difficult with visas and stuff. It is a problem that could arise, but hopefully the speed that things get done, I won't care by the time it's coming through.
Yeah. They were talking about 10 years before it all comes through anyway.
I think it will. Yeah. I think it probably won't make a difference. I mean, it might be different when it comes to taxation laws and things like that, but I think the visa thing will probably not be too bad.
Now, yeah, you've played with quite a few infamous people over your time. Who's your favourite? Are you going to tell me, or is it not politically correct?
Simple. It's very simple. For me, the favourite for me was Jack Bruce, always, because I learned more from Jack probably than anybody else about the way to approach music. I used to play sort of, when you're with somebody like Jack, who's so dynamic, you pick that up a little bit, and you it was like every gig was your last gig, basically. Yeah.
Well, we're going to play Jack Bruce shortly, but we've got a Freddie King coming up.
Oh, well, Freddie King was my favourite. It was the Three Kings, as they say.
Right, Albert and BB.
Well, Freddie was my favourite. I think most guitar players, although BB was obviously very influential, he was more on the softer side, and Freddie was full-on guttural, you know, gut-rending guitar playing.
So when you play guitar?
Yeah.
Guitar, yeah. Right. And you sing, who do you model yourself on?
I don't think anybody in particular like that. I think you pick bits of lots of people up, and it goes in, and it's a bit like a musical threshing machine. It goes in your ears, gets in your brain, and comes out in your hands, you know.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to play Freddie King, and then I'm going to get you to play something.
That'd be great. Okay, this is a song from the Live in Belgrade album. It's Only I Got What the Other Guys Want. Ain't got no money, ain't got a home, ain't got a car, can't get a loan, you know I can't get nothing. Got everything I need. So you can take your money, throw it in the dump, cause only I got what the other guys want. Ain't got a thing, ain't got a life, ain't got no kids, I don't want a wife, you know I don't need nothing. Happy as a king. So you can take your money, throw it in the dump, only I got what the other guys want.
Brilliant. You're going to tell us about that?
That song?
Yeah. Tell us.
I can't really.
Oh, that's good.
There's not a lot to
say. I wanted to know all the gory details, you know, who wrote it. Who...
Oh, I wrote it, yeah.
Right, okay. Well, that's good, Mr. Beaker.
Yeah, it was. No, it's just a fun song because you don't need to say anything. Everybody makes their own mind up about what it is that you've got that everybody else wants.
I've got a track, Handbags and Glad Rags, which I might be able to play afterwards.
Yeah.
What is that song about? Because I still don't know.
It's about the... somebody who's poor actually is, but a bit thinks a bit of themselves, you know, a bit
like a Mrs. Bucket.
Yeah, that kind of thing, you know. And it's being respectful for what you've got.
Yeah,
like the handbags and the glad rags that your grandfather had to sweat for you to buy. You know, so it's like respect what you've been given.
I asked you before that you're in the Hall of Fame, which is America. But what is your fan base?
Well, I think mainly the sort of Germany, Austria, Switzerland, Holland, that sort of area is the biggest one for us for touring, you know. But in America, we sell a lot of merchandise and CDs and stuff.
So do you think you'll attack America in the nicest possible way?
It's quite funny because actually Larry Garner, who we work with a lot and lives in Baton Rouge, and he wants us to go over and do some work with him, so we may. He did tell me a good story about Robert Plant when he met Robert in Louisiana when he was doing a festival. And Robert apparently, because he's a very cheeky guy, Robert Plant, very funny guy. He said, it's amazing, isn't it? He said, you gave us, the Americans gave us the blues, I brought it back, and look how much more you're paying for it.
It's true. If you did a gig in America, where would it be, would you know?
It would probably be around, you know, Louisiana, that area.
Because that's where that type of music would be more prominent.
Well, not necessarily, because a lot of it in Chicago, obviously, you know, with Buddy Guy's place, you know, Legends and stuff. But I think because Larry is based in that area, we would probably go there, you know. And Larry's got his own radio station, radio show too, so we get a few plugs over there, so I think that's how we sell so much stuff.
Now, you've got your new album, the Live in Belgrave.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
That was just it wasn't really an official trio album. It was just that Nick Steed, who's with us at the moment, he was doing other stuff, and so we had a sort of downtime, so we said, oh, why don't we go and do a few trio gigs? The agent in Serbia said, well, you know, come over and do some work. And we did it, and it went really well. And then somebody recorded it, it came out, and then the album did really
did all right.
But it was only by accident, basically. I mean, I much prefer the quartet or the quintet, you know, whichever format.
Do you prefer to perform live or in the studio?
Do you know what? I do like both. I think if I had to choose, I'd probably choose live. You know, it's you get a lot more, you know, that instant feedback, I think, is important.
Yeah, we find that with radio, because we don't really know if anybody's listening. We're hoping, you know, many thousands of people are listening. In fact, if you want to email us in, it's studio@salfordcityradio.org. Perhaps you say you can ask Norman a question. How did it all start? How did all this music business start for you?
For me, it was just like everybody else, really. We, you know, as a kid, I loved pop music It was my brother who was more into blues stuff later on.
I was going to ask you that, because if you'd like pop, you've diversified in a way.
Yeah.
Good word.
Yeah.
When did you see the light?
Well, I didn't. I never decided to do it. It was when my brother, who was very into blues, got a few bands together. I started playing with his bands. You know, he was older than me, so I was just like the whelp. You know. And everybody used to say, oh, he plays like a blues guitar player, but I'd never actually really heard much blues.
So you just fell into it?
It was just the way I naturally sort of played. Yeah.
Now, you've got, like you were saying, you would work in the southern states of America. Mm. The type of blues that's played there tends to be, you know, a bit sad, really, a bit, you know, they've got problems and things aren't right.
Well, to a degree, but it's like, you know, the term backbeat, you know, in music came from Louisiana when they used to have the dirge on the way for funerals.
Yeah.
And on the way back, they play happy music. So that's where, on the way back, was known as backbeat. Right, that's where the sort of blues thing came from. So it was very happy and very sad. It was both.
Yeah.
And blues is like that. Yeah. I mean, we tend to play serious music, but we still have a laugh on stage, and we still, I might crack the odd funny or whatever, you know, because I think you need dynamic in it. I don't think you can all be serious. You need, it's a bit like a situation comedy that's got some tragedy in it. You know, I think you need a bit of both to make the night fulfilling, really.
So which is the largest gig you've worked in, and what's the smallest?
Ooh, we played in some very small ones in... We were playing this one in Bremen, which the guy, who's a lovely guy and he puts music on all the time, said, could you keep the, you know, as quiet as you can, because the neighbours upstairs might not like it. I mean, that was small. But then we've done, you know, everything from the Shepherd's Bush Empires to MTV things in Budapest that they were... 40,000-50,000. It really doesn't make any difference, to be honest. I mean, as I always say, you only play it one at a time, however many are there, you know.
But we were talking before about acoustics, so does that make a difference if you're in a smaller gig?
Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's really gritty in a small venue, you know, and if you've got lots of PA stuff, mic, it sometimes waters it down a little bit, or it becomes more of a blur of a noise. You know, like a drum kit, for instance, you know, if they've got the best drum kit in the world, if they suddenly put mics all over it, it could be anybody's drum kit in the end, you know what I mean? I think you get more nuances in smaller gigs, and you get that atmosphere that I like, that being next to people when you're playing is quite nice. Yeah.
Now, you'd be pleased to know, I mean, you did say to me you got a good reaction last week when you're on the B with Mr. Sweeney. Okay, but that's because of me, because I was advertising it on the Facebook. It was nothing to do with Sweeney at all. What was it like? You know, I mean, obviously it's very different to being here at Salford.
What was it like doing the B? It was great.
I mean, the actual ambience of the place and everything.
It was great to see Mike again, because, you know, as we said on air, we've been mates for forever, you know, before any of us were doing anything, really. So, it was quite nice to meet up with, that we've both done okay, you know, in our chosen fields. I think it was quite nice.
I went to his gig at the Plaza in October. Yeah, I mean, he virtually was on stage all night. And I met him afterwards, just for a few minutes, and he was absolutely exhausted.
Yeah,
he was drained. He was absolutely drained.
He's an old man now. He's not like me, a youngster.
I'll tell him what you said.
No, don't.
Please, not that.
No, I couldn't believe actually he was older than me. I thought we were the same age.
You know, he said of himself, he said this on the radio, that if he wouldn't have gone into the music side, he would have been in jail.
Yeah. I think some of the music he played, he should have been in jail.
But that's another story, isn't it?
It's just all new things. Have you got a record by the police? I've got a police record. Yeah.
Now, I've got a version here of a certain I call him Mr. Baker, but it's Mr. Beaker. Yeah. When the Fat Lady Sings.
Yes. Right, well, that's a very, very easy one. Obviously, it's from the Wagner opera.
Is it? Is it?
Yeah. You know, that's what they used to say when it was so long, the ring. Yeah. They used to say, it's never over until the Fat Lady sings.
But you've put it to music, or it's been put to music. Mm. So, how did that come about?
I like the title of it, first of all. That's how I often write songs. And it was just about when somebody's saying, you know, it's never over until she sings. Well, she's singing.
Now, apparently you were live in 2012.
I was.
You were. Mm. So what's happened now, then?
I'm not so sure. I don't feel so well now.
I gave it my best shot. I had an empty gun. I hung on to a dream. Now the dream is gone. Never over. So the fat lady sings, now she's singing. I tried to work her out. She tried to do me in. She wanted a battle. She's just about to win. But they say it's never over. Fat lady sings, now she's singing.
Now, you never listened to a thing. You were yapping the whole way through that.
I've heard it.
Tell him.
I've heard it before.
You've heard that one. Brilliant, isn't it? How long did it take, you know, to sort it out, to arrange it and everything?
No time. Once I get the idea to do it, it's really quick. I forget the title, then I sort of just sing umpty-dumpty words to get the phrasing right, and then it's
done.
Pretty well done.
Yeah.
But then the band are great. They sort of put their own bits together, and that's the difficult bit with bands. You've got to pick people who play the way you like them to play, so you never need to tell them.
So you're talking about like-minded people?
Yeah, and people who do it automatically the way you like it. And then, it's so quick. You just say, maybe we could just try this or that, and everybody understands what you're talking about, you know.
Now, Nick wants to speak. He's our keyboard player.
Yes.
He's been asking, like, for the last 20 minutes, hasn't he, to talk. Hi, I'm Nick.
Good afternoon.
Hiya. So how long have you been playing keyboards, or has it been piano? Or?
No, I started off since I was about 7. My dad always had musical instruments throughout the house, so I started on the organ.
You didn't stand a chance, did you?
Not at all.
No. So did you play in church first? Or?
I should have done.
Church out now.
The truth's coming out now.
Yeah.
How did you get involved with this fella? With Mr. Beaker.
Mr. Beaker, I'd known about Norman for years, living in Stockport. And then one night I was playing at a gig in Stockport, in Heaton Norris, and Norman came along.
And he took pity, did he?
He took pity on me. He says,
come out of that church, he said.
Come out of that church and start doing some proper music.
So how long have you worked together?
I've been with Norman now for about 4 years, I think. 2014.
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
You said that with the long face.
Man and
boy. Yeah.
It's community service.
Are you going to do a quick twiddle on the keyboards for me?
Quick twiddle?
Yeah.
That's a great little twiddle.
Little twiddle.
Easy when you know how.
It is, isn't it? It's like everything else. Like you say, when you know, it's simple. Are you writing music at the moment, Norman?
Yeah, we're just getting a new album together to record, to get out by probably September, when we start touring again.
So, I mean, for your life, is it very difficult continually touring? Or, you know, as you get older, it gets easier?
I actually prefer it now, you know, than I used to. I think the touring bit, I actually get more peace and quiet when we're touring, because when you're travelling, you know, you can sit, you can read your book, you can do, if we're here, I'm either writing or producing or doing, you know, whatever. So really, I can only focus on the one thing when I'm doing that, you know, especially in Europe. It's more tiring to play in England, because you're coming back after gigs and stuff, and then continue with your own, your normal day life, you know, whereas in Germany, you're just concentrated on that one thing, you know, so...
Now, you've got this phone that works that you have to keep in touch with people. Do you speak to your family a lot?
Yeah. And it, oh, well, that's where it's really great, because it used to be a nightmare getting cards to, you know, 12 euro cards and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and, no, I mean, you can do it... on any way you do. So, it's, yeah, it's...
You can even Skype them now, can't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, it's... yeah. It's a long time since I've had a Skype, I have to say. No, I mean, it is great for that, you know. Yeah. That, and you can always, like, on Facebook or whatever. I mean, Facebook, for musicians, this is where I've always think people should have a look at this, where they say about technology being a bad thing. I think for music, it's a great leveller. You know, there was a time when only big stars, big record companies, whatever, could put something on YouTube. Mm. Now anyone can do it. And I think it's really good. There's some, like a friend of ours, John Gomm, a wonderful guitar player, and he just put one of his songs on, and Stephen Fry saw it and just put, wow. And it went absolutely viral. Now he's touring the world doing it. And it's just, he should be, you know, because he's so, so...
So this is a new word, isn't it? Absolutely viral.
Viral,
hang on.
Yeah,
viral.
In my case, it's more like viral.
Oh, right. Not virus.
As we used to have kids, viral, that horrible medicine. If you're not good, you're going to get some viral.
It's good for you.
Apparently, yeah.
Your tour, you're going to talk about your tour now, because of the Hall of Fame, you're going to do a special tour.
Yeah, we're just doing a couple of gigs, but we're doing one in the hometown of Spinning Top on the 19th of March.
Where's that?
Oh, it's on the, right next to the Garrick Theatre on the, the A6.
Stockport.
So, I mean, it'd be really nice that. We just thought we should do something, you know, local, because we don't play very much in Stockport at all. You know, they're not the venues, to be honest. But the Spinning Top's a really nice venue where they're putting a lot of live bands back on. So it's building up again, because it used to be in the Marketplace, was fantastic. There was four pubs that always put live music on, and they had some really good bands. But because it's free, everything was free, people lost the habit of actually paying to see something, you know. Yeah. And it is a bit of a shame now, because when the bands dissolve, there's nothing left, you know.
You know, just going back to touring, you say you prefer it in a sense, you know, because you can get... What about constantly in hotels or digs or whatever?
The only thing I don't like now... Well, there's two things. One is signing in at hotels.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I don't like. It always seems to take 10 minutes longer than you'd want it to take. Although we are well looked after, I have to say.
Yeah.
If we're in Germany, we've got a really nice, good agents who look after us.
Did you go in the same type of hotels all the time, so
pretty
people
much
know you?
Yeah, pretty much, and we know the hotels, and we know the places around. We probably know Germany better than we know Manchester, because we, you know, we actually decided to go and have a look round and things. So we are quite spoiled, you know. We're taken to nice restaurants to eat and things, so they do look after us. I mean, it's something that in England they've sort of lost that art quite a lot. You know, you can turn up in England and end up going to Wetherspoons for your meal.
Are you going to Frankfurt at all?
We do play a rock run around Bonn and Cologne.
Well, and I'll ask you on radio this. I've got a mate who does a show on a station called Radio Russelsheim.
Okay.
And I'm sure he'd be only too happy to have you in as a guest.
Yeah, I mean, again, they're very good. When we do Serbia, I mean, we were together, Nick and myself, we did Serbia. We're going down every road. The guy, the agent there, who was the basketball coach for Serbia, so you can imagine the size of the guy. And he's going, okay, and can you just pull over? There's a guy who wants to do an interview. And we were doing interviews, weren't we? In on the sensors of roads, you know, and TV there. Yeah. And it was all the way. And they are so geared up to publicising things. I said to him, where's the poster for the gig? And he went, look, and it was like the size of a billboard, you know, and they really geared up to do it. And in Germany, I mean, we know when we're playing. I could tell you now, in March, what time I will be having my dinner in Germany. I mean, seriously, they're that together. Seven, you know, it'll be four, I can on the contract say, 4 o'clock getting, 5 o'clock sound check, 6 o'clock meal, 7 o'clock open, 8 o'clock stage. And it, and there will be, it'll be like that too. And it's great because you know exactly what you're doing, you know. So it's a great place to play. And the audience is in, I think in England, we tend to pick the gigs that we really want to go to, quite specifically. I like Meatloaf, I'm going to go and see the Meatloaf concert, Eric Clapton, I'm going to see Eric. But in Germany, they tend to go out to watch music, to give it a try. And they may never go again, you know, but they'll go with the friends and they'll see it.
So you're saying in England, we're not like that? We no, like, I don't we think like we what are. We like?
Yeah, I think, you know, you say, oh, I'm going to go and watch this, I like blues, I'm going to go and watch a blues band or whatever, you know. But there, they will, they're used to paying as well, they pay money to go and see the gigs. It's not so much free pubs in Germany or whatever, but they're quite happy to pay because they love the music.
When I speak to people, they always say, I've got eclectic taste.
Eclectic?
I always wonder what that means.
As against eclectic.
yeah, that as well.
I don't know what eclectic is. no, but if you say to a, say an 18-year-old in Germany, I'd say, who's your favourite band? They'd go, oh, it might be Bruce Springsteen, yeah. Eric Clapton. Yeah. Snoop Dogg, you know, yeah. Everything's yeah. in there. You know, whereas yeah. we do tend to say, well, I like Eric Clapton, Peter Green, or whatever, yeah. or we know, we like Robbie Williams, you know, or whatever. Yeah. We tend to be more into one sort of style.
It's a bit conservative, isn't it?
We are quite, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, they will literally give a change. In Serbia, the audience is there, of course, because they've not had so much of it in there. What, 18, 19-year-olds who are mad about blues music but never actually seen it live. So we like to go and do, say, a big festival that pays the bills, and then instead of just coming straight back like a lot do, we'll stay for 3 or 4 gigs in clubs where the admission might be €4 because that's their standard of living, you know. And we don't make any money out of it particularly, but you make a lot of goodwill. And, you know, in the fullness of time, of course, they're buying your things, you know. And plus, it's, you know, I think, I said this to Mike the other day, we're like blues mercenaries a little bit, you know. I think, I've certainly had a lot out of blues music. It's only me time I'm giving back.
Yeah. You've been playing, obviously, for quite a few years. What do you think of the newer music that's coming out and even towards your own style of playing?
I think it's changed quite a lot because we used to have a particular way of playing blues, basically. And then it got a little bit rockier. People like Gary and people like that, now Joe Bonamassa, people like that. And I think a lot of the younger guitar players, where we used to be influenced by, say, all the old guys, Albert King, B.B. King, all these, I think they're being influenced by a smaller, more easy to see, you know. It's always on there, like Joe or a few of the others, you know. And so I think they're picking up that influence, which is, so it's slightly more rocky. Although, you know, to be honest, I mean, I play quite rocky stuff, you know. But I think it's the span of it. It tends to go more rocky than blues sometimes. And they play more songs now than they used to play when it was more a traditional sort of 12-bar blues or whatever. But there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, everybody's music evolves, you know, over the years.
I was going to say, their music as younger ones will change as they get older.
Yeah, I mean, we did, you know. I mean, when I first started writing songs, it was really unusual for blues people to write songs because it wasn't done, you know. And the first album that I did that was any really successful was Into the Blues, which I did for JSP, which was a very, very bluesy label. In fact, we were the only white band on the whole label because it had Louis Armstrong, Buddy Guy, all sorts of people on it. And when I did the album, which I was so thrilled with, I sent it to the record company, and John Steadman, he said, I think we made a mistake there. He said, I think that's not working for me, that. That's just not blues, that. You know? And I was devastated, because I thought this was the blues, basically, you know. And it went mad. Everybody bought that album. And a lot of bands from that, if there's anything I can claim, is I think a lot of the musicians at that time started to write their own music because they thought, yeah, well, he did it. Yeah, why can't we do it?
Are you surprised you're still sort of earning a living out of it after quite a few years?
I'm surprised after every gig, you know. Yeah.
All right, and the other way is, are you surprised who's still in the business and perhaps surprised those who are not in the business?
Yeah, I've never known how people give it up. I have to say that. I mean, it could give you up. You might get, you know, arthritis in your hand that you can't play or whatever. I can't imagine why you would stop doing it. I don't know what causes you to do that. I mean, obviously, with family things or money, and you know, you might need to be holding down a job and you can't do it. But I think even then, if I was working in the day, I would still want to play somewhere, or, you know, in the spare time. I don't understand how people just stop.
Now, what is you and Nick going to play next for me?
We're going to play a one of mine called That's Unnatural. We're going to bring it in on in E. It's in E for all you musicians. And we're going to bring it in on the five. That's a good American.
Well, get on with it then.
So unnatural. love you, baby. You know you're gonna drive me away.
Lovely. What are you going to be doing in the next few weeks, Norman?
So we're going to be getting the album material together, rehearsing. Hopefully we'll get some recording of it done.
Where do you record?
Various places. We're recording this one possibly with a studio near Huddersfield with a friend of ours, Chris Miley, who's done a lot of sound engineering for us, and he's very... He knows what we like, and he's quick at getting it. You know, it's important, I think, to...
When you put your albums together, I mean, you've got your music, everything's sorted, so how long would it take to record and, you know, you're actually studio time?
Probably 5 days, the way we do it. I mean, when I did Ruby Turner's album, I was given 5 days to do, each album, and it worked out okay. You know, we tend to do, like, bass... guide tracks. I'll tell you one trick that I do that I don't know about, I was saying to Nick before, that I really find useful in the studio is commentating on the gig. So when we're playing something, I'll be playing a guide track with the bass and the drums, it's only the bass and drums we're interested in at this stage. And I'll just be talking and I'll say, piano solo, guitar solo, horn section comes in on another track, you see. So when we come to do it, it's all there.
It's a guidance for you.
Yeah. So we all know what's happening. And I don't think people do it. And I think it's such an easy way, because if it's a long blues thing and you don't know who's going to be playing what, you say, is that where the guitar should be?
You've spilled the beans now. Everybody will know what to do.
I think it's a tip. It's a good tip.
Tip. So that's a Norman Beaker tip.
Yeah.
You want to put that on the back of your album. I've only got a minute left, and I wanted to play the Jack Bruce, but I'm going to leave it because I'd rather talk to you for the last... Well, it's just a minute, really.
Right.
It's rather sad. Look, it's been fabulous of you to come in, as you know, like you did previously, especially after being at the Beeb. I mean, it's a bit of a come down coming in. No, it isn't.
It's been very, very good, and we've had a nice cup of coffee.
I got a lovely cup of tea, which is very nice. Thank you,
Thank you. Yes, you
if you're listening.
Coffee,
it's not listening. There she is. You're getting a wave. And thanks, Nick, as well. It's really good of you to come down.